Chapter 12. This chapter describes in detail Krishna's pastime of killing Agasura. One day, Krishna wanted to enjoy a picnic lunch within the forest, and therefore Krishna went out early into the forest with the other cowherder boys, accompanied by their respective groups of calves. And while they were enjoying their picnic, Agasura, the younger brother of Putana and Vakasura, appeared there, desiring to kill Krishna and his companions. The demon, who had been sent by Kamsa, assumed the form of a python, expanding himself to a length of 8 miles and the height of a mountain, his mouth seeming to extend from the surface of the earth up to the heavenly planets. Having assumed this feature, Agasura lay on the road. Krishna's friends, the cowherder boys, thought that the demon's form was one of the beautiful spots of Vrindavan. Thus, they wanted to enter within the mouth of this gigantic python. The gigantic figure of the python became a subject for their sporting pleasure, and so they began to laugh, feeling confident that even if this figure were dangerous, Krishna was there to protect them. In this way, the cowherder boys proceeded towards the mouth of the gigantic figure. Krishna knew everything about Agasura, and therefore Krishna wanted to forbid his friends to enter the demon's mouth. But in the meantime, all the cowherder boys, along with their groups of calves, entered the mouth of the gigantic figure. Krishna was waiting outside, and Agasura was waiting for Krishna, thinking that as soon as Krishna entered, Agha would close his mouth so that everyone would die. While waiting for Krishna, Agha refrained from swallowing the boys. In the meantime, Krishna was thinking how to save the boys and kill this demon Agha. Thus, Krishna entered the mouth of the gigantic Asura, and once he was within the demon's mouth, along with his friends, Krishna expanded his body to such an extent that the Asura, Agha, suffocated and died. After this, just by casting his nectarian glance upon his friends, Krishna brought them all back to life, and with pleasure, they all came out unhurt. Thus, Krishna encouraged all the demigods, and they expressed their pleasure and happiness. For a crooked, sinful person, there is no scope for Sayujya Mukti, or becoming one with the effulgence of Krishna. But because the Supreme Personality of Godhead entered the body of Agasura, by Krishna's touch, this demon got the opportunity to merge into the existence of the Brahman effulgence and thus attain Sayujya Mukti. When this pastime was performed, Krishna was only 5 years old. However, it was 1 year later when Krishna was 6 years old and Krishna stepped into the Palganda age that this pastime was disclosed to the inhabitants of Braja. Parikshit Maharaj thus inquired from Shukadeva Goswami, "Why is it that this pastime was disclosed only after 1 year, and yet the inhabitants of Braja thought that it had been performed that very day?" And with this question, the 12th chapter ends. Chapter 13. This chapter describes Lord Brahma's attempt to take away the calves and cowherder boys, and it also describes the bewilderment of Lord Brahma, and finally the clearance of his illusion. Although the incident concerning Asura had been performed 1 year before, when the cowherder boys were 5 years old, when they were 6 years old, they said, "It happened today." What actually happened was this. After killing Asura, Krishna, along with his associates, the cowherder boys, went for a picnic within the forest. The calves, being allured by green grasses, gradually went far away, and therefore Krishna's associate became a little agitated and wanted to bring back the calves. Krishna, however, encouraged the boys by saying, "Oh, you take your tiffin without being agitated. I shall go find the calves." And thus Krishna departed. But then, just to examine the potency of Krishna, Lord Brahma took away all the calves and cowherder boys, keeping them in a secluded place. When Krishna was unable to find the calves and boys, Krishna could understand that this was a trick performed by Lord Brahma. Then the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the cause of all causes, in order to please Lord Brahma, as well as his own associates and their mothers, expanded himself to become all the calves and boys exactly as they were before. In this way, Krishna discovered yet another pastime. A special feature of this pastime was that the mothers of the cowherder boys thus became more attached to these respective sons, and the cows became more attached to these calves. After nearly a year, Baladev observed that all the cowherder boys and calves were expansions of Krishna himself. Thus, Baladev inquired from Krishna and was informed of what was happening. When 1 full year had passed, Brahma returned and saw that Krishna was still engaged as usual with his friends and the calves and cows. Then Krishna exhibited all the calves and cowherder boys as four-armed forms of Narayana. Lord Brahma could then understand Krishna's potency, and he was astonished by the pastimes of Krishna, who was his worshipable Lord. Krishna, however, bestowed his causeless mercy upon Brahma and released him from illusion. Thus, Brahma began to offer prayers to glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Chapter 14. This chapter describes the prayers Lord Brahma offered to Krishna, who is also known as Nandanandana. For Krishna's satisfaction, Brahma first praised the beauty of Krishna's transcendental limbs, and then declared that Krishna's original identity of sweetness is even more difficult to comprehend than Krishna's opulence. Only by the devotional process of hearing and chanting transcendental sound vibrations received from Vedic authorities can one realize the personality of Godhead. It is fruitless to try to realize God through processes outside the scope of Vedic authority. The mystery of the personality of Godhead, who is the reservoir of unlimited spiritual qualities, is simply inconceivable. It is even more difficult to understand than the impersonal Supreme. Thus, only by the mercy of God can one understand Krishna's glories. Finally realizing this, Lord Brahma repeatedly condemned his own actions and recognized that Lord Sri Krishna, who is the ultimate shelter of the universe, is Brahma's own father, the original Narayana. In this way, Brahma begged Krishna's forgiveness. Lord Brahma then glorify the inconceivable opulence of the personality of Godhead, and describe the ways in which Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva differ from Lord Vishnu. He also described the reason for the Supreme Lord's appearance in various species of demigods, animals, and so on. He explained the eternal nature of the pastimes of the personality of Godhead, as well as the temporary nature of the material world. By knowing the Supreme Personality in truth, the individual spirit soul can achieve liberation from bondage. In actuality, however, both liberation and bondage are artificial, for it is only from the living entity's conditioned outlook that one's bondage and liberation are produced. Thinking that the personal form of Lord Krishna is an illusion, only fools reject Krishna's lotus feet and look elsewhere to find the Supreme Self. But the futility of their search is the obvious proof of their own foolishness, for there is simply no way to understand the truth of the personality of Godhead without His mercy. Thus, having established this conclusion, Lord Brahma analyzed the great good fortune of the residents of Vraja, and then personally prayed to be born there, even as a blade of grass or a bush or a creeper. Indeed, the homes of the residents of Vrindavan are not prisons of material existence, but rather abodes envied even by the jnanis and yogis. On the other hand, any home without a connection to Lord Krishna is in fact a prison cell of material existence. Finally, Lord Brahma offered his whole self at the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, and praising Krishna again and again, Brahma circumambulated Krishna and then took his leave. Lord Krishna then gathered the animals Brahma stole and led them to the place on the bank of the Yamuna where the cowherd boys had been taking lunch. The same friends who had been present before were sitting there now. By the power of Krishna's illusory energy, they were not at all aware of what had happened. Thus, when Krishna arrived with the calves, the boys said to Krishna, "Oh, you have returned so quickly. Very good. As long as you were gone, we couldn't take even a morsel of food, so come and eat." Laughing at the words of the cowherder boys, Lord Krishna began taking his meal in their company. And while eating, Krishna pointed out to his young friends the skin of the dead python, and the boys thought, "Oh, Krishna has just now killed this terrible snake." Indeed, later, they related to the residents of Vrindavan the incident of Krishna's killing the Agha demon. In this way, the cowherder boys described pastimes that Lord Krishna had performed in his Balya age, 1 to 5, even though Krishna's Paugandha age, 6 to 10, had already begun. Shukadeva Goswami concludes the chapter explaining how the gopis loved Lord Krishna even more than they loved their own sons. Chapter 15. This chapter describes how Lord Balaram and Lord Krishna, while tending their cows in the pastures of Vrindavana, killed Danaka Asura, enabled the residents of Vrindavan to eat the fruits of the tala trees, and saved the young cowherders from the poison of Kaliya serpent. Revealing their boyhood or Paugandha phase of pastimes, Ram and Krishna one day were bringing the cows to pasture when they entered an attractive forest decorated with a clear lake. There they began playing forest sports along with their friends. Pretending to tire, Lord Baladev laid his head upon the lap of a cowherder boy and rested as Lord Krishna helped relieve his elder brother's fatigue by massaging Baladev's feet. Then Krishna also placed his head on the lap of a cowherder boy to rest, and another cowherder boy massaged Krishna's feet. In this way, Krishna, Balaram, and their cowherder friends enjoyed various pastimes. During this play, Sridhara, Subal, Stoka Krishna, and other cowherder boys described to Rama and Krishna a wicked, irrepressible, uncontrollable demon named Dhenuka, who had assumed the form of a jackass. He was living in the Talavana forest near Govardhan Hill. This forest was full of many varieties of sweet fruits. But, fearing this demon Dhenuka, no one dared try to relish the taste of those fruits. And thus, someone had to kill this demon and all his associates. Lord Rama and Lord Krishna, hearing of the situation, set off for this forest just to fulfill the desire of their companions. Arriving at the Talavana, Lord Balaram shook many fruits out of the palm trees, and as soon as he did so, the jackass demon Dhenuka ran swiftly to attack Balaram. But Balaram grabbed Dhenuka's hind legs with one hand, whirled him around, and threw Dhenuka into the top of a tree, thus slaying him. All of Dhenuka Asura's friends, overcome by fury, then rushed to attack. But Rama and Krishna took hold of them one by one, swinging them around and killed them, until the disturbance was finally finished. When Krishna and Balaram returned to the cowherder community, Yashoda and Rohini placed them on their respective laps. They kissed their faces, fed them with finely prepared food, and then put Balaram and Krishna to bed. Some days later, Lord Krishna went with his friends, but without his older brother Balaram, to the banks of the Kalindi in order to tend the cows. The cows and cowherder boys became very thirsty and drank some water from the Kalindi, but it had been contaminated with poison, and they all fell unconscious on the riverbank. Krishna then brought them back to life by the merciful rain of his glance, and all of them, regaining consciousness, appreciated Krishna's great mercy. Chapter 16. This chapter describes Lord Sri Krishna's pastime of subduing the serpent Kaliya within the lake adjoining the river Yamuna. And the chapter also describes Krishna showing mercy to Kaliya in response to prayers offered by his wives, known as the Nagapatnis. To restore the purity of the Yamuna's waters, which had been contaminated by Kaliya's poison, Lord Krishna climbed into a kadamba tree on the riverbank and jumped into the water. Then, Krishna began fearlessly playing within the water like a maddened elephant. Kaliya could not tolerate Krishna's trespassing upon his personal residence, and the serpent quickly went up to Krishna, biting him on the chest. When Krishna's friends saw this, they fell down on the ground unconscious. At that time, All sorts of evil omens appeared in Braja, such as earth tremors, falling stars, and the trembling of various creatures' left limbs. The residents of Vrindavan thus thought, "Oh, today Krishna went to the forest without Balaram, so we do not know what great misfortune may have befallen Krishna." Thinking in this way, they traced the path of Krishna's footprints to the bank of the Yamuna. Within the water of the lake adjoining the river, they saw their Lord Krishna, the very essence of their lives, enwrapped in the coils of a black snake. The residents thought the three worlds had become void, and they all prepared to enter the water. But Lord Balaram checked them, knowing very well the power of his brother, Krishna. Then, Lord Krishna, seeing how disturbed his friends and relatives had become, expanded his body greatly, forcing the serpent to loosen his grip and release him. Next, Krishna began playfully dancing about on the serpent's hoods. By this wonderful, boisterous dancing, Sri Krishna trampled the serpent's 1,000 hoods until his body slackened. Vomiting blood from his mouth, Kaliya finally understood that this Krishna was indeed the primeval personality, Lord Narayan, the spiritual master of all moving and non-moving creatures. And so, Kaliya took shelter of Krishna. Seeing how very weary Kaliya had become, his wives, the Nagapatnis, bowed down at Krishna's lotus feet. Then they offered Krishna various prayers in hopes of gaining their husband's freedom. "O Lord, it is quite fitting that you have brought our cruel husband to this condition. Indeed, by your anger, Kaliya has gained great benefit. What piety Kaliya must have amassed in his previous lives, for today he has borne upon his head the dust of the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead, the attainment of which is difficult for even the mother of the universe, Goddess Lakshmi. O Lord, please kindly forgive the offense Kaliya has committed out of ignorance and allow him to live." Satisfied by the prayers of the Nagapatnis, Krishna released Kaliya, who slowly regained his sensory and vital powers. Then, in a distressed voice, Kaliya acknowledged the offense he had committed and finally offered Krishna many prayers and said that he was ready to accept Krishna's command. Krishna then told Kaliya to leave the Yamuna Lake with his family and return to Ramanaka Island. Chapter 17. This chapter describes how Kaliya left the island of the snakes and how the sleeping residents of Vrindavan were saved from a forest fire. When King Parikshit inquired about Kaliya's leaving Ramanaka Island, the abode of the serpents, and why Garuda acted inimically toward Kaliya, Sri Shukadeva Goswami replied as follows. "All the serpents on the island were afraid of being devoured by Garuda. To placate Garuda, every month they would leave various offerings for Garuda at the foot of a banyan tree. But Kaliya, puffed up as he was with false pride, would eat these offerings himself. Hearing of this, Garuda became furious and went to kill Kaliya, whereupon Kaliya began biting the great bird Garuda. Garuda fiercely beat Kaliya with his wing, sending Kaliya fleeing for his life to a lake adjoining the Yamuna River. Prior to the above incident, Garuda had once come to the Yamuna and started eating some fish. The Rishi, Salbhari, had tried to stop Garuda, but Garuda, agitated by hunger, had refused to heed the sage's prohibitions. And so in response, the sage Salbhari cursed Garuda that if Garuda ever came there again, Garuda would immediately die. Kaliya had heard of this, and thus Kaliya lived there without fear. But in the end, Kaliya was driven out by Sri Krishna. Meanwhile, when Lord Balaram and all the residents of Vrindavana saw Sri Krishna rising up out of the lake, beautifully decorated with many different gems and ornaments, they all embraced Krishna in great pleasure. The spiritual masters, priests, and learned brahmanas then told Nanda Maharaj, the king of the cowherders, that although his son Krishna had been caught in the grips of Kaliya, it was by the king's good fortune that Krishna was now free once again. Because the people of Vrindavana were quite worn out with hunger, thirst, and fatigue, they spent that very night on the banks of the Yamuna. But in the middle of the night, a fire happened to blaze up within the forest, which had become dry during the hot summer season. As the fire surrounded the sleeping inhabitants of Vrindavan, they suddenly awoke and rushed to Sri Krishna for protection. Then, the unlimitedly powerful Lord Sri Krishna, seeing his dear relatives and friends so distressed, immediately swallowed up the terrible forest fire. Chapter 18. The killing of Pralamba Asura is described in this chapter. While playing happily in Vrindavan, Lord Baladev climbed up on the shoulders of the demon Pralamba and struck Pralamba's head with his fist, thus destroying him. Sri Vrindavan, where Krishna and Balaram enacted their pastimes, was, even during the summer, decorated with all the qualities of spring. At that time, Lord Sri Krishna would become absorbed in various sports, surrounded by Balaram and all the cowherder boys. One day, they were intently dancing, singing, and playing when a demon named Pralamba entered their midst, disguised as a cowherder boy. The omniscient Lord Krishna saw through the disguise, but even as Krishna thought of how to kill the demon, Krishna treated Pralamba as a friend. Krishna then suggested to his young friends and Baladev that they play a game involving contending parties. Taking the role of leaders, Krishna and Balaram divided the boys into two groups and determined that the losers would have to carry the winners upon their shoulders. Thus, when Sridhama and Vrishabha, members of Balaram's party, were victorious, Krishna and another boy in his party carried them on their shoulders. Pralamba Asura thought that the unconquerable Lord Sri Krishna would be too great an opponent to contend with, so the demon fought with Balaram instead and was defeated. Taking Lord Balaram on his back, Pralamba Asura began to walk away very swiftly. But then Balaram became as heavy as Mount Sumeru, and the demon, unable to carry Baladev, had to reveal his true demoniac form. When Balaram saw this terrible form, he struck the demon a ferocious blow on the head with his fist. This blow shattered Pralamba Asura's head, just as lightning bolts hurled by the king of the demigods shatters mountains. The demon repeatedly vomited blood and then fell upon the ground. When the cowherder boys saw Lord Balaram return, they joyfully embraced and congratulated Baladev as the demigods showered garlands of flowers from the heavens and glorified Balaram. Chapter 19. This chapter describes how Lord Krishna saved the cows and cowherder boys from another great fire in the Munjaranya forest. One day, the cowherder boys became absorbed in sporting and allowed the cows to wander into a dense forest. Suddenly, a forest fire blazed up, and to escape the flames, the cows took refuge in a grove of sharp canes. When the cowherder boys missed their animals, they went searching for them, following their hoofprints and the trail of blades of grass and other plants the cows had trampled or had broken with their teeth. Finally, the cowherder boys found the cows and removed them from the cane forest. But by that time, the forest fire had grown stronger and was threatening both the boys and the cows. Thus, the cowherder boys took shelter of Sri Krishna, the master of all mystic power, who told them to simply close their eyes. And when they did so, within a moment, Krishna swallowed up the fierce forest fire and then brought them all back to the Bandira tree mentioned in the previous chapter. Seeing this wonderful display of mystic potency, the cowherder boys once again thought that Krishna must be a demigod, and so they began to praise Krishna. Then they all returned home. Chapter 20. To enhance the description of Lord Krishna's pastimes, Sri Shukadeva Goswami describes in this chapter the beauty of Vrindavan during the autumn and rainy seasons. In the course of his presentation, Shukadeva gives various charming philosophical instructions in metaphorical terms. Chapter 21. This chapter describes how Lord Sri Krishna entered the enchanting forest of Vrindavan upon the arrival of autumn, and the praises the young cowherder girls sang when they heard the vibration of Krishna's flute. As Lord Krishna, Lord Balaram, and their cowherder friends entered the forest to graze the cows, Krishna began playing his flute. The gopis heard the enchanting flute song and understood that Krishna was now entering the forest. Then they narrated to each other Krishna's various activities. The gopis thus declared, "To see Lord Krishna playing his flute while taking the cows to pasture is the highest perfection for the eyes. Oh, what pious activities has this flute performed that enable him to freely drink the nectar of Sri Krishna's lips, a blessing we cowherder girls find difficult to achieve." Hearing the song of Krishna's flute, the peacocks dance, and all the other creatures become stunned when they see them. Demigoddesses traveling through the sky in their airplanes are vexed by Cupid himself, and their garments become loose. The ears of the cows stand on end as they drink the nectar of Krishna's flute song, and their calves simply stand stunned. The milk they have been drinking from their mother's udders still in their mouths. The birds take shelter of the branches of the trees, closing their eyes and listening to the song of Krishna's flute with rapt attention. The flowing rivers become perturbed by conjugal attraction for Krishna, and stopping their flow, embrace Krishna's lotus feet with the arms of their waves, while the clouds serve as parasols to shade Krishna's head from the hot sun. The Aborigine woman of the Shabra race, seeing the grass stained by the red kumkum adorning Krishna's lotus feet, smear this vermilion powder upon their breasts and faces just to alleviate the distress created by Cupid. Govardhan Hill offers grass and various kinds of fruits and bulb-like roots in worship of Lord Sri Krishna. All the non-moving living beings take on the characteristics of moving creatures, and the moving living beings become stationary. These things are all very wonderful. Chapter 22. This chapter describes how the marriageable daughters of the cowherder men worshipped Goddess Katyayani just to get Lord Sri Krishna as their husband, and how Krishna stole the garments of the young girls and gave the girls benedictions. During the month of Margashirsha, every day early in the morning, the young daughters of the cowherders would take one another's hands, singing of Krishna's transcendental qualities, and thus go to the Yamuna to bathe. Desiring to obtain Krishna as their husband, they would then worship Goddess Katyayani with incense, flowers, and other items. One day the young gopis left their garments on the shore as usual and began playing in the water while chanting of Lord Krishna's activities. Suddenly, Krishna himself appeared there. He took away all their garments and climbed a nearby kadamba tree. Wanting to tease the gopis, Krishna spoke, "I understand how fatigued you gopis are from your austerities, so please come onto the shore and take back your clothes." The gopis then pretended to become angry and said that the cold water of the Yamuna was giving them great pain. So if Krishna did not give them back their garments, they would inform King Kamsa all that had happened. But if Krishna did give their clothes back, then they would willingly carry out his orders in the mood of humble servants. Krishna replied that he had no fear of King Kamsa, and that if the girls really intended to follow his command and actually be his maidservants, they should now each immediately come onto the shore and take their respective garments. The girls, trembling from the cold, climbed out of the water with their two hands covering their private parts. Krishna, who felt great affection for these gopis, again spoke to them. "Because while executing a vow, you bathed in the water naked, you have thus committed an offense against the demigods. And so, to counteract this, you should offer obeisances with joined palms. Then your vow of austerity will achieve its full result." The gopis followed Krishna's instruction and, folding their hands in respect, offered obeisances to Sri Krishna. Satisfied, Krishna gave them back their clothing. But the young girls had become so attracted to Krishna that they could not leave. Understanding their minds, Krishna said that he knew they had worshipped Katyayani to get him as their husband. Because they had offered their hearts to him, their desires would never again become tainted with the mood of materialistic enjoyment, just as fried grains of barley can no longer grow into barley shoots. Next autumn, Krishna told them, their most cherished desire would be fulfilled. Then the gopis, fully satisfied, returned to Braja, and Sri Krishna and his cowherder friends went off to a distant place to graze the cows. Sometime later, when the boys felt disturbed by the great heat of summer, They took shelter at the base of a tree, which stood just like an umbrella. Krishna then said that the life of a tree is most excellent, for even while feeling pain, a tree continues to protect others from heat, rain, snow, and so on. With its leaves, flowers, fruits, shade, roots, bark, wood, fragrance, sap, ashes, pulp, and sprouts, a tree fulfills the desires of everyone. This kind of life is ideal indeed, Krishna said. The perfection of life is to act with one's vital energy, wealth, intelligence, and words for the benefit of all. After Krishna glorified the trees in this way, the entire company went to the Yamuna, where the cowherder boys let the cows drink the sweet water, and the cowherd boys also drank this water themselves.